Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, September 7th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, I know last episode it was raining in England. Hopefully it's not raining today.
Yeah, it's a little dull, but it's not too bad. And we're supposed to have sunshine next week, so all is well.
All right, good. So today is actually a holiday in the United States. It's Labor Day. But I'm here, I'm working anyway, you know, we got to get the podcast out. So we're, we don't want to miss a week, right?
That's pretty slick, Graham, since we're actually recording it on Thursday, not on the Monday.
But I know. I was trying to get credit for working on Labor Day, but you know,
yeah,
all right. So,
very good.
So, a lot going on as always. You know, I'm kind of sad because last week we delivered our last lesson in the MBA Admissions Academy. We did six lessons over the course of the summer, and you know, last week was interviews, and so that was just a lot of fun. I'm glad that we did that project. And stay tuned if you're an avid listener of the podcast. We've got some other stuff coming up that should be useful in that vein. The other thing I wanted to mention is that it was kind of a busy week last week because we also delivered, Clear Admit delivered an essay workshop where we sat down with admissions representatives from Wharton, Columbia, Duke, and Yale. And we just peppered them with questions about their essays. And, you know, it was actually a lot of fun. I mean, some of the schools have, Columbia has this question about picking a song or a movie or a book you like. And Duke had a question about 25 random things about yourself. So I got to turn these questions around a little bit on the admissions directors. And you can actually go and watch a recording of that whole workshop that we did. It's available on clearadmit.com. There's an article that should be out by the time this podcast airs. So take a look if you want to, if you missed that and wanted to watch it. And the other good news is that we have a second essay workshop coming up, and that's on September 16th. It's at noon Eastern, and the school's taking part in that one. We've got Chicago Booth, MIT Sloan, NYU Stern, and there may be another school too. I'm not yet clear on the final lineup, but those three are on board. Really looking forward to this. You do have to sign up in advance, and you can do so at bit.ly/essayinsight. So take a look at that. Alex, I feel like I still need to remind our listeners that we desperately need more reviews and ratings of the podcast, or just tell your friends about it. We really want to grow the audience, and we've got such great feedback that I just want to make sure that all the applicants out there are aware of what we're doing and you know the advice that we're providing. So, anything from you though, Alex, this week? I mean, how are things going? We've kind of headed into the new season, so.
Yeah, I mean, we're moving into the new season. We've seen a few sort of reports on Livewire regarding you know getting interviews at Columbia. So obviously, with Columbia with their early decision rounds, folks generally start applying their a little bit earlier than the more traditional round one. So seeing some activity there, it's quite interesting to see. Here's quite a good example, actually, of a school that's had to adapt its admissions process as a result of COVID-19. So the interviews are online. I think certainly from one of the candidates that reported, it was actually from an admissions officer rather than typically from an alumni and so on and so forth. So I mean, I guess my point of this is it's quite good to sort of review Livewire and so forth right now to see how schools may have had to adapt and change their admissions process a little bit. But it's all, yeah, super interesting and getting quite a few actually good entries on ApplyWire. And that is, we're in that season, right? So
yeah,
folks are gearing up for round one. And that typically year-on-year upticks the activity on ApplyWire, and that's great because then we can get great candidates to profile here on Wiretaps. It all fits nicely together, Graham.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did want to mention, if you are someone who's posted to ApplyWire and wants to be featured on the podcast, we always allow for you to kind of indicate that. And many of you, even in your comments, kind of will say that you listen to the podcast and want to be featured. But the other thing that I would like to do, Alex, if you're on board with it, is at some point, I think maybe starting in October, is have like guests on the show. And, you know, probably just one a week where you know, or every other week or however we want to do it. But I think it'd be a lot of fun to talk to a real ApplyWire poster and have them on the show so that we can really kind of go through their candidacy and get answers to the questions that we're often posing here where we don't have enough information. And we do it in an anonymous way so that if the person doesn't want to reveal their name or if they want to use a fun pseudonym, we could do that. But anyway, I'm gonna just put that out there. You can email info@clearadmit.com if you're someone that wants to be on the show, and then we'll reach out and try to figure out how to make it all happen.
Or I would say, Graham, surely they could just mention in an ApplyWire entry that they would like to do that.
Yeah, and we could, I mean, I think we could just, you know, have them call in and just talk with them and go through their candidacy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did want to give a shout out to Alexandra Kelly because she is our producer of the show. And not only that, she helped kind of formulate this idea of maybe bringing some people on, and I think it'd be terrific. And so stay tuned, everyone. But anyway, beyond that, just crazy times here. I wanted to mention that the essay workshop we did, which I referred to earlier, we had like, I think over 200 people join us for that online event. So busy, and definitely get signed up for the next one if you're thinking about it. So Alex, other than that, should we get into... Yeah. The wiretaps entries?
It makes me feel bad when you have me on a show, about 20 people show up, and when you have admissions officers on your show, you have 200 people show up. How about that?
Yeah. it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So let's see. Let's move on, though. Let's talk about the candidates we're going to review this week. Again, three ApplyWire entries. These really are kind of all over the map in terms of their interests and target schools and stuff. So let's get into it. This is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person's looking at four schools. They are hoping to start in the fall of 2021. And the schools are Cambridge, Cornell, INSEAD, and Oxford. This person's had a career that's involved both military service and market research, which is more recent. So they did their country's kind of required military service and then have been working since. GPA was 3.64. They have 8 years of experience post-undergrad, and they're located in Tel Aviv, and they're actually very flexible about where they end up post-MBA. I have to quote them directly because they said, "Thank you for your fantastic, insightful podcast and service to this community. I thoroughly enjoy listening and reading the different content on this that the website has to offer." So I really appreciate that feedback. So thanks for saying that. But the other thing is that they indicate they really want to go to a one-year program and that they're pretty focused on Europe. They said they could consider a two-year course in the U.S., but they're worried about their age. They shared a ton of information, but what it all boils down to is that they went to a liberal arts college, they even have a master's degree, but it's all in very qualitative coursework. They don't really have a quant background. And, you know, as they said, they're older, they're a little bit worried. They haven't yet sat for the test, but they're going to take the GRE, and they're thinking, you know, it's going to be somewhere around 320 or a little bit better, maybe. So you had some dialogue with this person. They shared a lot more information that we'll get into as we discuss. But what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, quite honestly, Graham, this candidate in my mind is super interesting, just like every other candidate we talk about, I suppose. But that said, I love the fact that military experience, obviously required for their country, but they did 6 years of military experience, which I'm guessing might be beyond the requirement, but I don't know that, right? And then they've gone into the corporate world, and then at a market research consulting firm, they were an analyst for a year, but have since then been promoted in more of a managerial type situation. I would imagine, like most military officer candidates that apply to business school, that they have really good stories to tell with respect to their experience as a military officer. Lots of interesting leadership and so on and so forth. And they have the corporate experience, which to me gives them a little bit of a leg up, because a lot of military officers applying to top business schools are coming straight out of the military. So they haven't been through any kind of transitionary phase. So this candidate has. You could argue then, well, the downside is they're getting old. Well, they're about half my age, but they're getting old relative to applying to business school. So in that regard, you could say, okay, that could be a potential issue. But for any candidate that's older than average, a bit of an outlier, I think they're 32, I think you said that. The key is to show, one, why the MBA is important to you now. So they want to switch into more of a corporate social responsibility role and so on and so forth. And, you know, obviously, as you said, most of their academic training is in the liberal arts sort of area. So getting the 1 year MBA actually, I think in this candidate's case makes very, very good sense. I think they can nail that piece, but also they've really got to nail how they're going to be a really strong contributing member of the student community and the student body. Oftentimes, an older candidate might attend the classes and do the classwork and so on and so forth, but you know they're not as connected to the overall experience, or at least that's the fear mm-hmm. from the admissions officer's standpoint. So they need to overcome that. Now, what else do they need to overcome? I reckon their academic experience has been very good, but they're very qualitative. I mean, their undergraduate GPA was 3.62. They've got a master's degree with a higher GPA. So I reckon they're smart, Graham, and you yourself came from a liberal arts background, and you're certainly smart. So coming from a liberal arts background is not the issue here. But they have a bit of a quantitative deficit,
yeah.
If for want of a better phrase. But I like the idea that they're going to take MBA math. They recognise this, that they've got to ratchet up that side of the application. So if they successfully complete MBA math, absolutely fantastic. The GRE score, I would love to see that north of 320. They're doing a lot of preparation, and they suggest they're going to hit between 300 and 320. That could be a little bit of an issue. So to the extent that they can really focus on driving that score up, that would be great. But yeah, Graham, quite honestly, I think that there is a lot to like here.
Yeah, and I mean, what I liked about this post, other than the praise that they heaped on the podcast and the website, is that this person's thought about all the angles. Like, they know they're older.
Yeah.
They know a one-year program maybe makes sense for them. They seem to know that, you know, getting a 320 plus would be smart, even though they're predicting more, 300 to 320. But I guess the main thing for me was I was wondering, you know, are there other 1 year offerings that they should be kind of considering as well? And, you know, I the first one that came to mind for me was IMD, just because IMD tends to have a slightly older student body, and is... you know, would like the leadership and teamwork that this person has had. And it's, you know, it's a pretty esteemed program as well. So that was one that came to mind. And then I wasn't sure if this person knew it, but London Business School, while essentially a two-year, traditional kind of MBA offering, they do have a track where you could go through the program in 15 months. Now, in fairness, a small percentage of students take that track. It's not the most popular way to do it, but it is available to you. And so I just wanted to mention that as well, because clearly they look like they're trying to aim high with respect to kind of brand name schools in Europe.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd mention that. HEC is another program, but, you know, then you're getting up to like 16 months. So some of these schools sit like in between, right? They don't just have the full 2 year or even the one. It's somewhere in the middle. But, you know, again, this person seems to have a really good head on their shoulders, and you know, we couldn't get to everything, but I particularly, like you said, the military service was impressive, because I am almost certain that their country doesn't require 6 years. They had three different positions, you know, and they were discharged honorably at the level of captain.
Right.
And they also did a military exchange program in the U.S. Army. So I think there's a lot to like. And as you pointed out, they've then worked. So they have that work experience, unlike some military candidates who are going to pivot entirely into the private sector from the military and are hoping the MBA can do it for them. This person's already demonstrated that they can do it. So, I think there's a lot to like. I worry that no quantitative background combined with a low test score could be tricky. Although, you know, we're dealing with European schools, which don't tend to be as test-centric. but they're going to, I mean, I know from working with European schools, they look at your quantitative background. I mean, they're going to be expecting this candidate to have what it takes. And so that's where MBA math and, you know, these courses the person's taking may be useful.
I'm guessing, Graham, that because of their work experience, their post-military work experience anyway, they have some analytics through work. You know, working market research, it's kind of hard to do market research if you don't understand numbers. And, you know, they also suggest they've done data analysis course focused on quantitative analysis via R, Python, SQL. So, I mean, they've got some exposure here.
Yeah.
So I think there's some good there. The one last question I'm going to bounce back at you, Graham, because they did ask me this question. I haven't really responded. If they were looking at the US, they're looking at 1 year program. Any options there, do you think, at the top tier schools?
Well, the issue is that, you know, I mean, Kellogg is long at a 1 year program, but it tends to be for younger candidates who were business majors or had heavily kind of quantitative undergrad. So that's out. There is the, you know, I guess Cornell has a 1 year offering. But again, my fear is that a lot of these 1 year offerings, when it comes to the US, they want to take people in who can kind of jump through the core quickly. And the problem that this candidate faces is they don't have the core on their undergraduate. And right. So it's a little challenging. I mean, obviously Columbia has J term, but that's a January start and it's not really a 1 year. It's, you know, it's a little bit longer, but it is faster than the traditional two. But yeah, I'm not thinking of one. I mean, there's some specialized MBA programs, you know, NYU offers some that are, you know, focused in a certain area, whether it's technology or, but that doesn't seem like what this candidate's looking for. So I don't have the answer on a 1 year in the US yet.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's forthcoming, but
no, I kind of agree with you. I was going to say if you could reveal something I wasn't really thinking. So as this candidate has kind of astutely figured out that targeting the European style MBA programs to service their needs probably makes more sense anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting candidate, Graham, I think. And, you know, a couple of potential roadblocks, but I think these are surmountable.
Yeah, agreed.
You know,
It's
do that MBA math, push that GRE score to the extent that you can, especially on the quant side, and everything else should fall into place.
Agreed. Yeah, great advice. Let's move on. Let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry. This person's got four schools on their wish list and they want to start in the fall of 2021. The schools are Berkeley, Kellogg, UCLA, and Wharton. And this person's been working as a kind of project operations engineer at what's called a super major. So a large, in this case, energy provider. They mentioned Chevron/Exxon. And then they want to get into consulting after business school. And they would love to work for Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. GMAT score is 740. GPA is 3.81. And they've been working for 3.5 years. They're located in Houston, Texas, and are happy to go wherever post-MBA, but did mention they kind of wouldn't mind working in the Northeast or in the Bay Area. They also note that they are a huge, all caps, fan of the podcast. They said that they started listening to Wiretaps in January of this year. So that means they've squandered at least, well, many months of of time with us, but hopefully it's been useful. We'll see how they do when they apply to business school.
You see a bit of a theme here. I'm only selecting people that say nice things.
Okay, yeah. So, so the other thing, though, that they mentioned is that they want to basically pivot from oil and gas engineering into kind of like management consulting with one of those top firms, and then go into like thinking about, they really want to work in like sustainable, scalable, clean energy tech, right? So they're thinking, hey, I'll go to McKinsey or wherever, do some consulting, preferably with the energy sector, and then make the leap into a firm in that industry. But they're, you know, they're shifting out of this kind of engineering role and into more of a management role, and they want to use consulting plus the MBA to kind of get there. So this is actually, I mean, that's kind of standard fare. Not everyone works in the energy sector, but, you know, a lot of people go from a kind of technical engineering or, you know, whatever it might be background, using the MBA to pivot into more management role. So there's nothing like shocking in that. And I think I like the industry focus. I was scratching my head a little bit about school selection. I wanted to ask you about that. But what do you make of this candidate? Because you did have some dialogue with them on the site too.
Well, I'll just bounce it back to you, Graham. Why aren't they applying to HBS, just as you asked me before we started recording?
Yeah, I mean, I just, when I saw the numbers and the experience that they've had, it just, yeah, it occurred to me that, you know, at first I was like, well, if you really want to be in the energy sector, well, which McKinsey, Bain, or BCG offices are doing the most consulting in that domain? And my initial thought was, well, you might end up back where you are now, which is in Houston. Or perhaps there's some, you know, renewables and kind of clean tech work that's being done out in California or maybe on the East Coast. So there could be other opportunities. I'm by no means an expert in that area, but I did sort of say, wow, you know, I was wondering what was driving the school selection, because I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't really put it all together. I mean, they did say they wouldn't mind being in the Bay Area after business school. And the schools on their list are all great schools. But I just wondered, like, how did they arrive at this list? And have they talked to, like, the head of the energy club at each of these schools? Or have they done their homework in that domain? Because I'm just wondering, yeah, where the list comes from. That's just a basic question.
Where do you think this candidate's from, Graham?
Originally? That's a good question. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know. It's possible that they're from Texas, but that's where they are now and that's where they're working. But they did say they went to, where they went to college? They didn't say, but they did. Yeah, there are a bunch of things in the background, because they did mention that they have performed in a band throughout America, also in India and Kenya.
Yeah.
For like the past 10 years of their life. They've been volunteering. There's a lot of stuff in here that they're very active in their cultural temple.
Yeah.
Doing community outreach. So I don't know what the person's background is. Are they, I think they're first gen.
Yeah.
Did they say they're first gen college. So yeah, I don't know what to make of it. It'd be good to know more about that too.
Yeah. I mean, it is quite interesting. I hate to sort of position it like this, but to me on paper, this candidate could be super outstanding. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And really, there's no reason why they shouldn't be applying to Harvard and Stanford. They say they want to be on the West Coast potentially. So Stanford has to be in the mix, too. And, you know, that first gen college person, they've done some really super interesting things work wise. They're also in a band. I mean, Graham, you run a band. I mean, surely that's your ticket right there. I mean, it's like lots of super interesting stuff here. So, you know, unless they're sort of applying from a very overrepresented applicant pool, which is possible, where then to overcome that, they need to just also make sure they get their applications in the first round if they can.
Mm-hmm.
There's just such a lot to like here.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I love their goals too, Graham. And what one thing I really like about their goals is it just makes too much sense.
Yeah.
Like, they worked in oil and gas. They want to be a superstar in the clean energy field. They want to enable that by, you know, top-tier MBA, top-tier consulting, back into clean energy, or back into energy sector, into clean energy. It just all makes perfect sense. So a candidate like this, absolutely, you could make an argument that they have an opportunity to have large impact in the long run.
Yeah.
And that's what top-tier business schools are seeking.
Right.
So I don't know where the flaws are here, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the one thing that's interesting is, as an admissions reader, when you read an essay about someone who's had, you know, firsthand exposure, I mean, they actually say that the work they've been doing right now in the oil and gas industry has been all around, like, designing and optimizing energy generation for refining and chemical plants, right? So they've had this, like, front row seat, right, to all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so as an admissions reader, you say, well, yeah, you know, if they've been doing that and then they go and work at McKinsey or Bain or BCG and go back into the industry on a managerial side and want to do sustainable energy or renewable energy, like these are the kind of people that might, you know, be able to really help change the world and help, you know, the environment and all that stuff. So
yeah.
It's easy to like root for someone like this and hope that they can, yeah, solve some of the big problems, much in the way that, you know, maybe someone working on vaccines or whatever might be a story people can get behind right now with COVID and all that stuff. Right. So yeah, this is it's a nice storyline. And again, they seem like they're doing a lot of stuff outside of work. They have an interesting cultural background potentially.
Yeah.
But as you did say, would you feel differently about this candidate if, like, let's say they're from India and just moved to the US in order to go to university? Would that change or no? Would they fall into that kind of overrepresented bucket suddenly as kind of an Indian engineer? Let's say maybe they're male.
Right.
Does that change for you how they might be viewed?
I mean, it's possible that it could put them in that bucket, and I'm curious if they fall into that bucket or not. I think the only thing that then does for the candidate is it creates a little bit of urgency. Get your applications in early.
Right.
You're clearly a superstar. You clearly have massive ambition and the wherewithal to execute on that ambition. You also do cool things outside of work. You know, you're mentoring other first-gen college kids. I mean, absolutely. I love this stuff.
Yep.
Just don't risk your candidacy by going into round two if you are from an overrepresented population. Make the most of what you've got. Surely this candidate should be going to a top-tier business school, or at least have the opportunity to go to a top-tier business school.
Agreed, yeah. So again, I think just knowing more about their background, I mean, again, they sounds like they went to undergrad in the U.S., so
yeah.
That helps to an extent. But again, I really think there's a lot to like here, and I wouldn't overthink the, you know, what bucket they fall into stuff, because again, as you say, they've got the ingredients to be a great candidate. Just maybe apply in round one if possible, get it out of the way, and be in early. So
and start looking at Stanford's first essay.
that's your favorite thing to bring up. You know, yeah, it's funny. Columbia has that essay that I mentioned earlier about a song or a book or a movie. And I was suggesting that what they should do at the end of the year is take all the essays and make like a playlist of the music that was most frequently, you know, recommended, or the you know, top 10 books that were recommended, and share that with people.
Yes.
But I think they're too busy probably to do that. But it is interesting, some of the questions that schools ask, you know, to get at these different aspects of people's lives, right? So
yeah, but it wouldn't take them much to actually come up with that list. That would actually be quite interesting.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
So all right, so let's move on. We've got one more candidate for this week, and this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. This person is applying to 4 schools as well. So I think everyone today had 4 schools on their list. And they want to start in the fall of 2021. And the schools are Tuck, Harvard, LBS, and Kellogg. This person's been working in loyalty and behavioral marketing as a consultant, which I think anyone who has a rewards card or a frequent flyer, like, they know probably what that is inherently, but I haven't seen many candidates with that focus area, so it's kind of interesting. And they're hoping to get into consumer goods. They're looking at places like Nestle, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, GPA 3.37, years of work experience, they've had 6, and they're currently in Cincinnati, Ohio, and are open to wherever after business school. They mentioned that they're currently working in data analytics with a company that's owned by the largest traditional grocer in America. So I don't know off the top of my head who the largest traditional grocer is, because originally I was thinking, oh, is Walmart's not a traditional grocer, I don't think. So yeah, but in any event, that's what they're doing. And I think they've been basically working on personalized marketing campaigns for this, you know, loyalty marketing program that they have, right? So very interesting stuff. They did work, and they've had some other roles, you know, prior to this one. And they're wanting to get an MBA because they basically have no formal business background. And so, you know, this person didn't like study business as an undergrad. And they really want to get like a solid base of the fundamentals, right, by going to business school. And they also think that there's been, as they've worked in the industry, they've noticed that there's kind of a gap in marketing leadership in their industry. And so, you know, they think that there's room to bring kind of MBA level skills into that space. And so, yeah, what do you make of this candidate? I think this is kind of an interesting one. We don't see that many people in this domain. And, you know, obviously they want to stay in their current industry, but with a little bit of a pivot into brand management. So, yeah, what do you think of this candidate overall?
I'm not sure why I selected him, Graham, because he said nothing positive about the podcast. So, no, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, super interesting. I think it's kind of ironic, right? The guy being gender neutral, I'm not quite sure, but they work in data analytics, basically, for a marketing firm. But there's no marketing leadership at the firm, which, you know, in most firms now, there's a CMO in the C-suite, you know.
I think she's just saying that in her industry, she thinks there's like room for people to do, right, to be better CMOs, oh, okay, or something. And by the way, I think she's a woman, okay, because she says that she leads something called Femme Finance, right, which is a personal finance series for women at the company. So I think, okay, this is a woman. I think it's more that I agree, like marketing has changed, yeah, like really dramatically because of big data and things. I mean, you go to the supermarket and, you know, a week later you get something in the mail with a coupon based on the things you bought, you know, so everything's gotten way more sophisticated. And maybe I think that's what, yeah, she's trying to get at, that there needs to be more leadership there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, anyway, the point is, I think, I mean, she's working, she or he, but I'll take your word for it, working in, I'm very analytical type of setting, right? Data analytics with respect to marketing, which I think is a field wide open right now. It's super interesting, building algorithms and various other things. So to the extent that she's got a head around that stuff and really understands it, not to suggest that necessarily that she is a data scientist, but if she can talk to the data scientists and strategize and so on and so forth, she's got a leg up on a lot of people going into the MBA, I think. So I think that stuff's really, really good. So a couple of things. Her GPA is a little bit lower than average, 3.37. There was an illness that she says she's going to address in the optional essay, which will be good. Not that she was ill, but I mean, it's good that she can add some context. She's also taking HBS Core, which is very good. And obviously, doing the GMAT, to the extent that she can get a good quant score on that GMAT and get the score over the 700, that will be very helpful too, obviously. And yeah, I think there's a lot to like here, Graham, much like the other candidates, which is, it goes without saying, but we do get some high quality folks on ApplyWire and so on and so forth. So I think there's a lot to like here. If she gets that score in the GMAT over the 700, if she successfully completes HBS Core, I think it's very important for her to do that. And she says she's taking it, so I assume she's currently in the process of that. Yeah. So that's very good. And that shows a couple of things. One is obviously it enables the ADCOM to recognize that she's better prepared to start the MBA, but it's also showing her own self-awareness, mm-hmm, right? She recognizes there's potential here. One, the GPA is slightly lower, but two, she avoided, you know, quant stuff in her undergrad or whatever it is, avoided yeah, the business stuff. So she's now going head on. She's going to do HBS Core and she's going to do the MBA. And that says, I think, a lot. She's ambitious. She wants to take that marketing leadership role. And so forth. So yeah, again, Graham, a lot to like here. I did suggest she add a school like Ross to her list. I think Ross is a good fit for her. I do like the other schools that she's applying to, and she belongs, I think, if she's successful in the GMAT and so forth, she does belong in one of these top programs.
Yeah, I really like the more that we kind of discuss, I like this candidate quite a bit. I mean, she went to a public Ivy in the Midwest, which I presume is, you know, like Michigan or one of those, you know, top kind of state schools. The other thing I like is that, you know, kind of, it sounds like she has kind of liberal arts background, so majored in German. in undergrad. And so some, as long as you can kind of thread the needle and show that you're ready quantitatively, like you've taken HPX Core or MBA Math, or, yeah, you know, you have a couple of quant courses on your profile and you do well enough on the GMAT, I think schools don't mind someone who has that kind of broad background. So I think there's a lot to like. I think the top schools on her list are absolutely where she could focus. Ross is good in the domains that she's interested in targeting. So nice addition to the list. If you know, I understand some people don't want to double dip and go back if she is a Michigan grad. So I could understand that to get a sort of new network.
Yeah.
Obviously, Kellogg is very strong in the areas that she wants to focus in as well. So, the only other school, and I feel like we say this all the time, but I would actually encourage her to look at Wharton's marketing department because it's really, really good with data analytics.
Yeah, and I forgot about that. Yeah.
So that's the only one that I can think of. And I really think if she can do well enough on the GMAT, I think all these top schools are in play. So I really am rooting for her to get 700 plus so that she can, you know, comfortably move forward with these kind of top schools. And yeah, a lot to like, though. I think this, you know, there's a lot of potential.
And quite like the first candidate we profiled, Graham, I imagine they're working quite a good analytical role.
Yeah.
Both of them. So while both of them on paper look weaker on the quant side,
mm-hmm,
they're working in a quantitatively focused field or,
sure,
or area. So hopefully that eases them into performing quite well on the quant side of the tests, doing the HBS core in this candidate's case and doing MBA math in the first candidate's case.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know the subtle differences between those two programs, but those two programs look like the two programs that top business schools really truly respect, MBA math and HBS core.
Yeah. So, agreed. I think my guess is that MBA math might actually be more suited if you're actually also trying to prep for the GMAT, and that it gives you a lot of basic kind of underpinnings, you know, that you can use to solve problems, things. But there's also a lot of spreadsheet training and things. So anyway, both are fine. Schools like them both. In any event, thanks to that candidate for sharing her profile. Again, a lot to like. Three interesting candidates this week. I think, you know, we see more and more diversity in career choices and things. We had oil and gas. We have this kind of marketing analytics and, you know, the first person. The first person.
Corporate social responsibility.
Yeah. So anyway, all over the map.
Which is great.
Yeah. All over the map and people in different markets with different target schools. So thanks for picking these out. And we'll be back in 1 week's time. Again, don't forget to sign up for our second essay workshop with MIT, NYU, and Chicago Booth. Really looking forward to that on September 16th. Please rate and review this podcast and tell your friends. Thanks so much, Alex.
Very good. Thanks a lot, and stay safe, everybody.